Welcome to Minnesota Musical Memories with Tom Campbell. Today I am talking with four members of the Underbeats. Today is March 7th, 2010, and I'm talking with Jim Johnson, Donnie Larson, Ray Berg, and Rod Eaton. If you guys wouldn't mind, could you tell me your full name, date of birth, and hometown?
Rod Eaton. Date of birth, January 11th, 1944, and my hometown is Minneapolis.
James Calvin Johnson. Date of birth, August 25, 1943. My hometown is Waterloo, Iowa.
Donald Larson, August 20th, 1943, in hometown, Northside, Minneapolis.
Raymond Berg, hometown, Brooklyn Center. Date of birth, 7/18/41.
Let's go around again, and we'll just keep going. We'll kind of go this way. I would like to know what the very first local band you saw play live was and where. Rod, you?
No, Wagner and the Bops would have been the first one, I think.
Mike Wagner and the Bops. Where were they playing?
Out in, well, it was a roller rink in Crystal.
Coliseum.
Was it called the Coliseum?
Yeah.
Okay.
Crystal Coliseum.
Jim, first local band you saw play live?
It was the Big M's.
Where'd you see him?
At the Minneapolis Auditorium.
Donnie, first band you saw, local band.
Big M's at North High.
What year roughly are we in now?
Probably 61. 61. Then after that, it was Mike Wagner and Bob's, Jim Thaxter, the Travelers. Yeah. Them guys.
Ray, first band, local band you saw
Mike
live?
Mike Wagner and the Bops at Crystal Coliseum, and it was probably 58 to 60, somewhere in there.
Wow.
Yeah, it was.
What kind of place was the Crystal Coliseum? And where was it located?
On now County Road 82, I think it is.
Yeah, 81.
52 then.
52 then, 152.
Right, just a few blocks from where the Clock Restaurant used to be in Crystal.
Right, just north of Robbinsdale, about a mile.
It was a dump.
It was a Quonset hut.
Yeah, it was a Quonset hut.
It was a Quonset hut.
Round roof?
Right.
Yeah.
Quonset hut.
But it was great. Mike Wagner, Jim Thaxter,
yeah, everybody Damon, played there.
Damon Lee and the Diablos and the Dorados. Mm-hmm. They were probably the best of the bunch at that time.
Satellite Donnie Dan Dax. And the Galaxies.
Yeah. This is all early rock and roll bands.
Oh, yeah. This is 61, 62.
I think it was prior to 60.
Yeah, we were still in rehearsals.
I was like 58 for me when I heard them. Yeah.
So was the Crystal Coliseum kind of a hot spot?
The spot.
The problem with that was by the time we were ready to play, the Crystal Coliseum was done. And I really wanted to play there.
That was what we all strive for.
It was cool.
But they closed. They burned, I think.
I think it burned down.
Everybody was playing the same song. Yeah. Some people were better than the other. Mike Wagner was more toward Elvis, and they had an echo on his voice that just killed.
Yeah.
Nobody had put that on a voice before. There's a thing called an echoplex. And if you could afford one of these, you put it on your guitar. But Mike Wagner and his band had enough money where they could actually put on the guitar and one on the PA system. So Mike sounded just like Elvis.
Wow.
They were out in front.
Mm-hmm. Who was in the Dorados?
Donnie Dax. Tom Secret.
Gary.
Sounds like you were impressed by these guys.
Best blues band out there at that time.
Well, I can't think of Gary's name. Maybe look
Nielsen?
Him up. Nielsen.
The drummer used to work at B Sharp. I can't think of his name either.
Joey Hyatt.
Joey Hyatt. They were fabulous. Also playing in strip bands around town. So Joey Hyatt was a hell of a player.
Yeah, really good.
Jazz guy, but playing in a rock band or blues
I can't
band.
Remember who played bass with that band.
Tommy Secrest.
Yeah.
So
he ended up playing piano.
Yep, but he was the original bass player.
That was the band,
Was the Crystal Coliseum like a dance club or more like
dance hall.
Roadhouse.
They were all teen clubs. There was no liquor sold in any of these places when we started playing.
Okay.
We didn't play bars. Bars were like, that was for old guys. when we first started playing.
So roughly, would you guys go out there on a Friday and Saturday night? Is that what you did?
Fridays after rehearsals and Saturdays. And sometimes they'd do a Sunday afternoons too.
And how many people would fit into the Crystal Coliseum?
About 1,000.
Maybe.
Between 500 and 1,000.
800.
I'd say 450 maybe. Yeah. Yeah. But it seemed packed.
It was a pretty big building, though.
Yeah, it was
huge size. And it was nothing in there but the stage on one end, and it was just a big empty place.
Yeah.
I'd say 800, easy.
What did it cost to get in there?
Maybe a buck.
Yeah, probably.
Half a buck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody met there. Everybody in the nursery met
there. It was the
there.
Hangout.
Was there refreshments inside?
Yeah, there was a Coke bar.
Yeah, there was a Coke bar.
And there was a fight every other minute.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I can tell you the names of these guys.
Probably.
But I don't want to really, get that personal.
So the musicians were only part of the entertainment.
Was this the Baldies and the...
That was
Baldies
later.
Baldies and the Animals.
That was down on 23rd and Washington.
That was northeast against north side.
I'd like to know the first 45 you bought and where you bought it.
Red Sails in the Sunset.
By who?
Wasn't that Pat Domino?
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm pretty sure. In fact, I still have that. I've got a version of Red Sails in the Sunset by Fats Domino on my iPod today. And I think it was by him then, but it was covered by somebody else, so I'm not sure anymore.
I think it was covered by one of the, Pat Boone or one of the...
Yeah.
Had you heard the song on the radio?
Yeah.
WDUI or KDWB?
I think KDWB was the station that everybody in my school listened to.
You remember where you bought the record?
Not a clue.
Jim, first 45 you bought?
Long Tall Sally, Little Richard.
Where'd you buy it?
It was a place over in Northeast on the other side of the hill over by the White Castle. I don't think it had a record shop.
Donnie, first 45 you bought?
Sweet Little 16 by Chuck Berry, and I bought it downtown at the shop that I can't remember what the name of it was anymore, but I absolutely had to have it.
He was In the Mood by Cork Ethel.
Ray, first 45 you bought?
I think it was Bo Diddley. I think.
By who?
Yeah, by Bo Diddley.
By Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
You must have been to Nickel Lake Records at some point, right?
Not for years. For me, it was too far away.
Too far?
Now when they started paying us to record for them, then we did.
Yeah.
Damn near lived there. Recorded right across the street at K-Bank. Across the street and down the block.
Right in the basement.
All right, we're going to go around again, and this time I'm going to ask you the first musical instrument you purchased, what kind it was, and where you bought it.
Didn't purchase it, but I rented a trombone from Schmidt Music Stores when I was in fifth grade, I think. School band.
I'm going to look that up. I can.
And I can't tell you what kind it was. I don't remember. I played it for about a month and a half.
Jim, first instrument you bought?
It was a trumpet. I was 8 years old. My mom and dad bought it for me.
8 years old.
Well, always wanted a guitar, but that was not considered a band instrument.
Donnie, first instrument you bought?
Magnetone bass that Jim Johnson and Russ Hagen picked out for me. You will buy this guitar. It was 35-inch scale. It was huge, but it was
we're
gonna
call
mine.
Your mama.
It was mine. Little Richard's bass player played one. That's why they said, you got to have that one.
Do you remember where you bought it?
Yeah, Torps.
Mm-hmm. Torps?
Torps Music in St. Paul on University, yeah.
Ray,
no, Ray Street.
Mine was, I don't remember the make, but it was an F, they call it a cleft hole, an arch top from Lowry Music, 1958. I didn't know how to play, but I bought it, and in fact, my first time playing it was pantomiming.
go back here. What was that? I'm sorry.
It was like a cleft hole cutout, arch top.
Oh, okay. And like a K or a harmony, one of those kind of things.
Yeah, I don't remember the name, but way back.
I don't know when you got that Gibson.
Well, the Gibson, just at the time, probably 60.
Well, that was a beauty.
Yeah.
So when did you guys first get together in a band? How did the Underbeats start out?
Oh, boy. Okay. I met Russell Hagen, a friend of mine who built hot rods in Columbia Heights, and for some reason... This guy knew another guy that played guitar, this friend of mine. It was Russell Hagen. Russell came over. He brought his guitar, and I brought my guitar. And we just, one day, and we just knew, this is it. Let's quit school.
did y'all go to the same high school? Or
No. He was from Brooklyn Center. I was living in Northeast Minneapolis. So the next day, he picked me up in his mother's Cadillac, which wasn't bad. I mean, just dazzling me. The guy actually lived in the suburbs in a house. I'd always lived in apartments, with my families. So Russell and I started just rehearsing. I had a little Dan Electro. And the thing is, what we first discovered was you needed an unwound G string in order to do that Chuck Berry booty, booty, booty thing like that. So what we did... We both sat down on the couch and took a G string and unwound it. I mean, rather than go by a B string or something like that, we actually unwound the string.
Sure.
And it took us hours. Finally, we put them back on our guitars. And it was like, we looked at each other like, wow, that's it. That's how you do it.
How did you know how to do that?
Oh, God knows. You know, I mean, I think Don Dax might have, this is a guy from the Dorados, might have hit, you got to have an unwound G in order to bend strings.
Okay.
So then, and Russ and I were playing, we need a bass player. Not anybody we could jump into playing bass. Well, we know Donnie. We might be able to get him to buy one.
They didn't like the bass player. Remember that guy?
So, Donnie, you got the call.
Yeah. No, I was dating Russell's sister at the time.
I got in there.
That's another story for another time.
Yeah.
But they just said, hey, Don, you want to learn how to play bass? Well, maybe. Good. We got the bass for you, and that's it. We went down to Torps.
What's a bass?
Went right down to Torps, and he said, this is all you got to know. Do, 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 do.
You play the bottom note.
That's so this it. Is the start of the Underbeats. Yeah. What year is this?
62.
It's
between 60 and 62. I somewhere's in there.
No, it was 62, because I was already done with school.
It was.
62. Sort of.
Okay. So next step, get a drummer?
Mm, wait. Get a drummer. Drummer's name, the guy, it was, who knew Bob?
I don't have the faintest idea how he came into it.
Bob DeWayne, Duke, he had a cool name. So, all right, let's get Duke. So the guy had a 36-inch kick drum, you know, the marching drum.
Yeah, big one.
And mm-hmm. He got a snare drum and a cymbal and a sock cymbal. That's the sock kit. And we just started practicing with the three of us. We interested in, we didn't even, Russell was playing rhythm at that time. Then Russell got a wild idea to join the Army. So Russell and me figured, okay, we'll go in on the buddy system, we'll play guitars, and we'll go all over the world, and we'll travel on the buddy system and play guitars and stuff. So after talking to my parents and, you know, and some of the people there, they said, no, it's a bad idea, Jimmy. But then Russell, for some reason, went ahead and did it anyway.
Join
the Army. Figure he's going to play guitar all over the world.
I was looking. I met Del Winslow. We were looking to put together a group. I don't know how I met him.
Del from the Trash
Man. From Trash Man. Yeah. And just at that time, I met Russ. I don't know how I met Russ if he was in the Army. But I met Russ, and somehow I
connected. Maybe you got in a fight with him somewhere.
I don't know. But maybe I was drinking somewhere, and he and I met. I don't. It might have been my car. Thumper. Remember Thumper?
Sure. Yes. Oh, yeah. Nice car.
But
51
it was 51 Chevy, all, you know,
totally
all tricked
customized.
Out.
Custom.
And so it could have been that, but somehow I met you guys through Russ.
Yeah, and I can never forget. We went over to your place, and I remember that guitar of yours was gorgeous. I mean, hey, the guy can play. He can do two-string rhythms. And that was a pretty fabulous thing to know at that time. There weren't too many guys who could stretch their fingers like that. First of all, back then, a guitar was a rare item.
Yeah,
there was maybe... three in a neighborhood. Now everybody's got a guitar. Mm-hmm. But back then, and anybody who could play one, that was even more rare.
Still is.
Yeah, I learned to play mine in the basement. I drove my dad nuts practicing, so I learned mine in the basement.
Well, the thing is, it was a solid body guitar, so you didn't have to plug it in.
So you guys are playing in your basement. You haven't played any
at
gigs
Don's
yet.
Basement is where we started rehearsing in Brooklyn
after
Center.
Rush went in.
Yeah.
54th and Logan. Yep. In that area. And then we just started practicing down in the basement. And pretty soon people started telling us how, you know, we were pretty dang good. And then Duke, he joined the Navy.
Yep.
Well, I don't know. And then, so then we auditioned drummers. And Rod came over. And Rod, you're the guy.
How'd you happen to come over, Rod?
You know how Rod got, you know how you got the gig?
I do,
you're the only one that could play that Bye Bye Johnny. That.
Oh, okay.
Nobody else could put that backbeat anywhere else except on you know, one, two, three, four, like that. Yeah. But this song had two, like that. And Rod was the only one that could do that.
Oh, so Chuck Berry had interesting rhythms.
He sure did. Yeah. He experimented a lot back then.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize Willie Dixon played bass on all those early Chuck Berry recordings. And that's why he
Johnson,
and Johnny Johnson, the keyboard player.
Still a bad boy.
Chuck Berry played all the down notes, and these guys, the overall feel came out as a swing shuffle.
Yeah.
And it was very, very hard to duplicate because you had to have everybody in the band on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of them just came out with playing the rhythm. That's part of it. But the rest of it has to be that backbeat that came out to be a swing fit.
That's the thing with Chuck Berry a lot of people didn't understand, too, is that drummers all wanted to go. And it was just it was a single stroke.
A lot of the Chuck Berry, the drums, and well, a lot of rock and roll, early rock, the drums were mixed way down. You know, some of them didn't even have drums, or they have just a little drummer brushes. Rock drumming wasn't much in the early recordings.
But it was excellent drummers.
Yeah, oh yeah, Nashville Cats and jazz guys. Studios. Jazz yeah, they were, because there were no rock drummers.
All jazz guys. Sure.
So who comes up with the name The Underbeats?
Underbeats. Okay.
Yeah.
I had a big argument with Russell and I. It's got to be something beats or tunes or something like that. We come up with underbeats, and I thought downbeats or backbeats. And then we went back and forth, and I come up with underbeats. And he goes, yeah, that's it. And I go, wait a minute. So what the hell is an underbeat? But we went with it, and for some reason it caught on. I still to this day cannot figure out, because to me it's like, underbeat? You know, what does that mean?
What is it?
I guess it doesn't have to mean anything.
What year does the band start playing live?
62.
Or very 62. Early 63.
Do you remember the first gig?
Yes.
Where was it?
Wasn't Bill's it Roller Rink in Anoka.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was the park in Brooklyn Center.
And Mr. Donald Larson forgot his guitar.
You showed up, though, without your guitar? Without
Yes, we got to the gig, and everything was all ready to go. And all of a sudden, Donnie, where'd you get out? Oh, I must have left. So our friend, Larry Palmy, was a 57 or 58 Plymouth.
58 Plymouth.
Yeah.
Holy
hot car.
I mean, this car was so fast. He flew back to Brooklyn Center, got Donnie's guitar, flew back to Anoka, and we started on time.
It had a turntable in it. Remember that? A 45
turntable.
Yeah,
he had a 45 turntable.
Mounted underneath the dashboard. And you'd ride with them, and you'd go, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. The arm must have weighed 14 pounds, and it still skipped.
Records were unplayable.
No, we would put a roll of nickels on it. I mean, you could see the vinyl just shaving off of it.
You can only play a record twice.
Okay, so at the first gig now, what kind of equipment is everybody playing at this gig?
Little bitty Fender amps.
Fender amps.
I had a little Gibson Explorer. Huh. In fact, I have one now, and it's a little 10-inch speaker with about 15 watts, and it just sounds terrific. Yeah. I'm playing a 330 Gibson with a Bigsby. Did you have that Jazz yet?
I had the Magnetone, but I played through the Ampeg B15 Portaflex, and by the time we started gigging, I traded it in on a 62 Jazz.
You played on that gig, right?
I did.
Okay, you had that Supro amp then, didn't you?
Supro, that's right.
What did we sing through back then?
Through the amps.
That's what I thought.
We plugged our microphones into our. Oh God, how did I do that with that Explorer?
I don't know.
And we get the vibrato out of the amps if we want it on the voice side too.
Ray, what kind of guitar were you playing?
My Gibson.
Gibson?
SG. What was that model?
We pretty much SG. Les Paul. It's called a Les Paul SG.
Les Paul Cherry,
Special.
Cherry
they
red.
Call them.
Rod, what kind of drums?
Where's that Ludwig set?
Where'd you buy them?
Schmidt Music.
Schmidt.
I think, I could be wrong, but there weren't many places that sold drums in 1960.
No. So how did the Underbeats go over at Bill's Roller Rink in Anoka?
Fabulous.
We killed it.
Nailed it.
Don had a bass fan. This guy loved bass guitar. He had his ear next to his amplifier about the whole night. I think the guy was a little...
He's deaf now.
A little something wrong.
He's deaf now.
But boy, he loved bass. But I remember now...
Two bands that night.
Right away we
there
did
were?
Well.
I don't remember that.
And the first band was like kind of a surfish band, y'all. And we got up there and we started playing Chuck Berry, and that was it.
I mean, I don't think anyone rehearsed as much as hard and long as the Underbeats did.
We rehearsed a lot,
and I think that's what made the difference.
We had to have.
And I've always been like that. It's like it can't be just okay. It's got to be
right on.
Excellent.
We threatened to quit because Jim didn't think we were ready to go.
Oh no, I wasn't going to do that gig. I thought we're not ready yet, and they all threatened to quit. And thought, okay, let's do it.
You know, I don't remember that Chuck Berry was all that popular in the mainstream.
Nobody
at the time.
Could play it.
Well, I mean, we brought it forward.